evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, August 1st, 2024. South Sudanese say their basketball national team made them proud after U.S. beat them.
Though our boys lost, but we still believe in them, and we know that they have really tried their best and they have really given out all that they can, and we are proud of them. We're still proud.
And a former basketball player says the next game with Serbia will determine the fate of South Sudan's national basketball team. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. It was a somber mood Wednesday night for South Sudanese basketball fans after the U.S. beat the Bright Star 103-86. Those who gathered to watch the game at a basketball gymnasium in Nimrat Talata residential area say they're hopeful the national team will reach the finals. Dennis Logonyi was in the midst of the fans and has this report for VOA from Juba.
South Sudanese basketball fans chanting SSD said they had hoped the men's national basketball team would defeat the United States team at the Olympics on Wednesday, but that dream did not come true. Nyamal John says she came to this basketball gymnasium in the Nimrat Talata residential area to support South Sudan's team, and she was sad to see the team lose.
Though our boys lost, but we still believe in them, and we know that they have really tried their best and they have really given out all that they can, and we are proud of them. We're still proud. It's just a difference of 17 points. That's a like to the Serbia. So we still hope that they're still going to do better in the next match, and we're still going to be there to support them.
Another fan, Deng Malith, says he blames South Sudanese players who played weak defense.
The game was actually great. We played against the greatest players in the NBA. What I say is, like, our nation is really doing good. We need to keep up with basketball. The problem was that we can't really defend against the greatest players. They're actually good at the three-pointers. They shoot outside the box. Our players are actually not good to defend in the box.
Fiona Richard is another fan who says the players should correct their mistakes before facing Serbia on Saturday.
The American team is stronger than us. What I can say is, like, today's game is different from that. There were some weaknesses that we have as a South Sudan team, but it's not bad. I believe that we're going to correct ourselves and come for the next game when we are fit enough and strong and to correct our mistake and ready to win the next game we are going to play on Saturday.
Most of the Bright Stars team members play professionally in Europe, Canada and Australia, and they nearly defeated the Americans last month in a friendly match. However, the U.S. team, made up of professionals from the National Basketball Association, overwhelmed South Sudan in Paris. Joel Allen, a dual citizen of the U.S. and South Sudan, says the game was a good opportunity to showcase South Sudan's basketball talent.
Nobody can imagine a small country with a big country. But we thank God for this opportunity and the way our team showed up in a good way. They give hard time to American people.
Alex Fikila, an artist who was watching the game in Nimrat Talata, says he is not surprised by the performance of the U.S. team.
This is how game is. You know, in game, there are like three things. You consider win, draw, or lose. But it's not a big deal. We have tried, actually, you know. But I hope next time we're going to make it. I cannot say that, like, they have played bad, but they have tried their best.
Michael Achwil, a former basketball player, says South Sudan is moving in the right direction. He says fans should keep their hopes alive.
We're still going to go in South Sudan. We might lose an 8th seed. We don't want to do that. That's why we want to beat Serbia Saturday. So we'll be going separate ways with U.S. We'll go to a different group. U.S. go to a different group. Now we have a chance moving up this bracket. Then we'll meet again. We might go to final. So keep your finger crossed. Our kids are good. You know, they're good. They stand with the giant, America.
South Sudan is currently in third place in Group C at the Olympics Games in Paris. The Bright Stars play against Serbia on Saturday. The winner of Saturday's match will advance to the next stage of the tournament.
Ice, 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 ice.
For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still on basketball matters, former South Sudanese basketball players say the country has potentials in developing the sports if the government invests in building stadiums across the country. Achul Bangol, who is a former head of the South Sudan Basketball Federation, says South Sudan can do better if given an opportunity.
Yeah, what I suggested before the match, I suggested four things. I was expecting one of the four or combined of all of them or at least one or two. One thing is the cool mindedness of the players and the coach per every specific game. And this is determined also by how they spend the night and how they were worried and how they are excited. Those are challenges. The other thing is coaching. So coaching is very determining a lot in the side again. So if coach is also nervous or for a reason or two, the coach did not call time out in a good time, the game can run away. Now, the other thing, also factor of luck, and then, of course, then the players. Now, when I talk of players, every game in basketball is determined if you have three good players out of five doing you a good attack, performing well in attack, and also all the five are doing well in defense, then you do turnovers. These are the determining factors. But come on. Loan has done a lot. Our team has done a lot. Our players are actually younger than the U.S. team, and they could have beaten the U.S. team.
In yesterday's game, South Sudan had lots of turnovers. And my question is, what should the Bright Star do to avoid such mistakes on Saturday when they face Serbia?
Complete carefulness. When you are attacking, you should not lose your ball from your side or should not lose the ball from the other side. You have to make an attempt by a minimum of 1 point. If you are fouled and then you are made to make free throw, then you miss two, then you score one, at least minimum 1 point or average two, or the best thing, 3 points. If you shoot outside the box. But if you are attacking and you don't even reach and the ball is taken away from you, that is called turnover.
Let's talk about the federation here. There are people saying that the federation decided to capitalize on professional players who are playing in Australia, Canada, Europe, and U.S. instead of players in Juba, local players in Juba, are not given opportunity to compete. Why is that so?
Okay. We started the federation. The federation was started by me in 2008. And then by 2013, the federation was admitted as a member of FIBA because we are now independent 2011. Then 2012, we applied. And then in February 2013, our admission was done in Buenos Aires. Okay? So in 2017, we tried in Cairo, and we did not achieve anything. 2019, I engaged one coach from America out from South Sudan who was volunteering because he saw us playing in 2017. Mm-hmm. So I did not get it in 2017. So in 2019, an American coach came to us and he said that he will volunteer. So we tried with some colleagues from Juba. There were three players from Juba and the rest of players from U.S. But I failed to reach the NBA players for two reasons. I didn't have certain contact with them, and the federation was not able to pay for insurance for the player to leave the zone where they are insured. So the FIBA cannot impose on NBA club to release a player without insurance. So we appealed to Lul, and Lul was to give up his seasonal instead of renewing, he was given open check to extend. But he turned it down because we applied to him for him to come. And the reason we gave him all the reason and he was observing. He said we want the best of the best and we want best of the best coaching. We want money and we don't have money.
So you are looking at the tactics. You think there's something wrong with how the players are being positioned. Is that what you're saying?
The players are moving. But also position is that the current point guard is not a point guard. He's a forward and he's a good scorer. They can disrupt the defense and then throw the ball back and somebody can bring 3 points. No country can withstand the South Sudan attack. We have a point guard. We just need a point guard.
All right, Achuel, thank you very much for your analysis on this situation with the national basketball team. And as usual, the whole country is wishing them all the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And our wishes, yeah, we are blue to the team. Thank you.
That's Achuel Bangol, former head of the South Sudan Basketball Federation. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. From sports, we go for some politics now. Young Kenyans, mostly members of the Generation Z, have been leading the nationwide protest now in the second month running, organized largely on social media with no notable leaders and cutting across the country. The protests have snowballed into a movement calling for good governance in the country. So who are the Gen Zs leading the protest that polls show have over 80% backing from Kenyans? Juma Majenga reports from Nairobi.
These have been the scenes in the streets of Nairobi and across Kenya for the past 2 months. Young people leading demonstrations to call for good governance. Government data show about 3/4 of Kenya's population is under 35 years old. Wanjiru Gikonyo is an expert on what she calls transformative governance in Nairobi.
And what they said is they realize there is no one to speak for them.
Most of the protesters are part of Generation Z, born in 1997 and later. The protests were sparked by a contentious tax bill that President William Ruto later withdrew. But protesters say the president has to step down as well. 26-year-old Kasmuel Mak-Oure has been in the forefront of the protests. He says the Ruto must go call is not an attack on Ruto personally, but a call for good governance.
It is the Ruto-isms, the isms that have been associated with him, the corruption that bedevils his government, the cronyism, the sheer incompetence of the people who surround him in government, the sheer number of unconstitutional offices that we've had to endure in his tenure, the extrajudicial killings, the excesses of the police. In a country where we're living, where we have a police force and not a police service, Ruto must go is a clarion call to a better Kenya.
Ruto dissolved his cabinet on July 11 and reconstituted it to include members of the main opposition party. Speaking last week in Mombasa County, he pledged to tackle the main accusation against his government.
I will mobilize resources that are available. I will mobilize every resource that is available to deal with the challenge of corruption.
But critics say the new cabinet, which has half of the fired ministers back in office, does not inspire hope. Recent polls show over 80% of Kenyans support the youth-led protests. Wanjiru says this is because the protesters spoke to the feelings of many Kenyans.
Kenya is in a bad situation. Our political leaders do not reflect our aspirations. And the young people have come and spoken to our aspirations. So really what we are seeing by these shop owners and business owners and parents who are supporting their young people is these young people have captured our aspiration.
Analysts say to bring about real change, the youth-led movement has to organize politically and collaborate with other progressive political groups. Protester Leon Mushiri agrees.
It's high time the young people come together and say that we have identified certain individuals from all over the 47 counties, and we have come together and we're saying that this is an opportunity for us also to go on the ballot, come 2027.
President Ruto says the government will not allow further protests in the country, saying, quote, enough is enough. But activists note the right to peaceful protest is guaranteed in the constitution, and protesters like Mak-Oure are defiant. They are planning a major demonstration in Nairobi on August 8th. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Central Africa Republic, which borders South Sudan, is struggling with high cases of mpox or monkeypox. Find out more after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Central Africa Republic officials say they are meeting with governments of neighboring countries to investigate the origins of mpox or monkeypox after declaring a fresh outbreak of the disease. The Central Africa Republic, which borders South Sudan in western Equatorial State, is concerned the disease could spread after the Democratic Republic of Congo reported more than 12,000 suspected cases and about 500 deaths since January. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A health official in the Central African Republic, or CAR, tells civilians in the central market in the capital, Bangui, that mpox, also known as monkeypox, is in their midst. He says the pox outbreak has been confirmed in several towns and villages, with fresh infections reported this week in Bangui. The Central African States officials say scores of suspected cases have also been reported in the bush along the CAR border with Cameroon, Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria, provoking fears that the disease may spread very fast, the officials say. Pierre Somse is the CAR's health minister.
Minister, please.
Somse says the CAR government is pleading with family heads, community leaders, including traditional rulers and clerics, to inform health officials whenever civilians have symptoms or suffer from fever, muscular aches, sore throats, headache, or have rashes and large boils on their bodies. Somse spoke Wednesday on CAR State TV. He said civilians should avoid contact with wild animals and wash their hands with soap and water after contact with animals and sick people. The Central African State says health workers have been dispatched to towns and villages where confirmed and suspected cases of pox have been reported to transport patients and suspected cases to hospitals. Somse says people infected by the virus will be isolated and treated free of charge in hospitals. Health officials are warning civilians against taking suspected patients to herbalists or African traditional healers. They say the lives of civilians and traditional healers who are in direct contact with patients out of hospitals are at risk. CAR health officials say humanitarian teams are in towns and villages searching for patients hiding in communities due to stigma and the belief that mpox cannot be treated. On Wednesday, CAR government officials said they were coordinating with the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Cameroon, and Chad to jointly fight the disease. Maxime Balalu, CAR communication minister and government spokesperson. He says the CAR alone cannot stop monkeypox spread because it borders with DR Congo, Nigeria, Cameroon, Congo, and Chad are very porous. He says it is difficult for any Central African state to single-handedly control the movement of people, especially cattle ranchers and hunters across the Congo Basin. The Congo Basin is the world's second largest rainforest after the Amazon. The Congo Basin has more than 600 tree species and 10,000 animal species and is shared by Angola, Cameroon, the CAR, DR Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Tanzania and Zambia. Rwanda and Burundi earlier this year confirmed 5 cases of the highly infectious monkeypox virus in their territories. They said they were investigating the origin of the infections and educating civilians on how to stop contamination. DR Congo, which is struggling to contain a new strain of monkeypox, has recorded about 8,000 pox cases with close to 400 deaths this year, the World Health Organization says. The UN says Europe, Australia and the US are among countries that have reported cases of monkeypox. It says the cases outside Africa were reported in 2022. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From health issues, we go for economics. Ethiopia, which borders South Sudan, says Monday it's easing foreign exchange curbs as part of an economic reform package as the deeply indebted nation awaits a multi-billion dollar bailout from international lenders such as the International Monetary Fund. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said the reform agenda will lay foundation for economic growth and job creation. Ahmed Suleiman, senior research fellow for the African program at Chatham House in London, says the reform package is a big shift as it's part of the liberalization of the Ethiopian economy. But he cautions the economic trajectory can be derailed because of the ongoing conflict and unrest in Ethiopia.
I think layman's terms is a good way to start. Essentially, this is quite historic. Shift for Ethiopia, you know, because we're talking about the actual, it's seemingly liberalization of Ethiopia's economy. So both the kind of foreign exchange system, shifting towards a market-based regime, you know, trying to ease the kind of crippling foreign currency shortages that have been in the country since Abiy's government took over and even before that, and trying to boost private sector-led growth. It is a huge, huge shift when you think about the state-led development policies of the former government under the EPRDF. And actually, you know, the promise to liberalize early on under the Prosperity Party before that when Abiy took over, but a realization of the difficulties in doing so, kind of curbing some of those liberalizations. So you kind of had one foot in and one foot out. But I think that, you know, the real crunch in terms of the fiscal problems that we've seen Ethiopia have over the last couple of years and the worsening of its fiscal situation has meant that Ethiopia is now paying, you know, it is agreeing to come into line with these international standards. And you know, this is largely being designed to meet the IMF requirements to unlock a lot of funding from both the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, the World Bank and other creditors. So it's really to try and assuage those creditors, a number of them to whom Ethiopia holds quite substantial amounts of debt.
Mr. Suleiman, you're right. The IMF has been calling for numerous reforms of Ethiopia's tight state-controlled economy, including floating the currency in order to unlock the funding. But the Horn of Africa nation is battered in recent years by several armed conflicts, the COVID pandemic, climate shocks, and it has about, what, $28 billion of external debt. And it's also grappling with sky-high inflation and a shortage of foreign currency reserves. So with all this, can they really implement what they're actually trying to do?
This is the difficult question. As we've seen immediately, in terms of the immediate impact, there's been a 30% devaluation of the bill against the dollar, which, of course, will immediately contribute to inflationary.
That's Ahmed Suleiman, Senior Research Fellow at the Africa Programme at Chatham House in London. He spoke with my colleague, Yehes Wihup, from London. And now to U.S. politics. The United States say it was not involved in the assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in an overnight strike in Tehran. Haniyeh is the second Iranian-backed militant group leader assassinated this week, raising the possibility of escalation in the region. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakwaswara has the story.
Ismail Haniyeh was last seen alive attending the inauguration of Iran's new president, Masoud Pezeshkian, on July 30th. Haniyeh, the political leader of Hamas, an Iranian-backed Palestinian militant group, was killed in an airstrike the following day. In Singapore, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told Channel News Asia the United States was not aware of or involved in Haniyeh's assassination.
Well, of course, I've seen the reports, and all I can tell you right now is I think nothing takes away from the importance of, as I said a moment ago, getting to the ceasefire.
No one immediately claimed responsibility for the assassination, but Israel has targeted Hamas leaders since the group's October 7 attack on Israel that triggered the ongoing war in Gaza. In April, an Israeli airstrike killed three of Haniyeh's sons. Iran's Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, who met with Haniyeh the day before he was killed, has vowed revenge. In a statement, he said, quote, "We consider it our duty to ask for the blood of our dear guest." Iranian ambassador to Lebanon, Mojtaba Amani, also blamed the U.S., saying, "We know that the Americans usually guide and support the Zionists in such criminal acts." Haniyeh's killing happened a day after Israel carried out a strike in Beirut that killed Fuad Shukur, commander of Hezbollah, an Iran-backed group in Lebanon. Israel holds the group responsible for a deadly attack in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights over the weekend. With fears of regional escalation rising, Western countries are urging restraint. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said war is not inevitable.
We're going to do everything we can to make sure that we keep things from turning into a broader conflict throughout the region.
Meanwhile, Israel continues its military campaign in Gaza as a ceasefire for hostage agreement remains elusive. Qatar and Egypt, key mediators in the talks, said Haniyeh's killing jeopardizes truce efforts. But Blinken declined to speculate.
We simply don't know. What I do know is the enduring imperative of getting the ceasefire. And what I do know is we'll continue to work at that every day.
Israel has killed more than 39,000 people in Gaza, according to Palestinian health authorities, which do not distinguish combatant and civilian casualties. The campaign is in retaliation for Hamas' October 7th attack, in which the militants killed 1,200 people in Israel and took more than 200 hostages. Patsy Widakwaswara, VOA News, Washington.
And that report by Widakwaswara brings us to the end of our edition for this Thursday, August 1st, 2024. We now leave you with Afrigo and the song Zawango. Listening to Afrigo Band and the song Zawango. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Zawango.